The portfolio doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, who are investment advisor representatives of their respective registered investment advisor firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed by the portfolio doctors and guests on this radio show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the recipient of or a substitute for personalized advice from ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management LLC, or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer of solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any listener. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. You're listening to The Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. Your financial future depends on making sound investment decisions. Make sure you get accurate information and a weekly checkup from a source you can trust, Portfolio Doctors. Now, live in studio, here's Dan Osgood and Steve Bick, The Portfolio Doctors.
Happy Friday, everyone. It is The Portfolio Doctors. I'm Dan Osgood.
I'm Steve Bick.
And we have a special guest in studio for the first time with us today, Colby Gibson, branch manager at RPM Mortgage.
Hi, gentlemen.
Which is, welcome. Good to have you, Colby.
Thank you.
We're going to definitely, this is kind of a tease that we're going to talk probably a fair amount about real estate today.
We haven't done that yet. Yeah. And normally real estate's a bit of a part of a person's portfolio.
I think it plays a small part. Have you seen that before, Colby?
I think I have, yes.
Maybe once or twice?
Yeah.
Well, the market's kind of selling off a little bit, not really, mostly flat today.
Other than the NASDAQ, for some reason.
The NASDAQ got beat up a little bit today, but overall kind of flat and kind of flat for the week overall, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, roughly.
Earlier this week, it seems like every week now we're starting to talk about Janet Yellen as she has assumed the role of scapegoat, I guess.
Well, she jumped in the hot seat, put it that way.
Yeah, it was her first kind of real big, long talk.
Yeah, it was the first open market committee meeting that she was chairperson.
So she got the
So
doing.
That's it. So then you have to report to the markets, right?
Yes. And the big news, well, not really big news, she said they're going to continue the taper. So at beginning April, they're going to cut down to a measly little sum of $55 billion a month.
Right.
And that put a little more continued panic, I guess. She did drop the absolute 6.5% as unemployment because there are other factors, which we've talked about that before. We didn't think that was going to be a real valid tipping point.
No.
But the thing that I think has gotten people, I don't know if it's concern, but they're considering what she said to be kind of telegraphing for the first time how the Fed anticipates keeping rates low after the asset purchases and kind of tipping, saying maybe 6 months might be a number where they'll start considering if they have to possibly raise rates to try to keep inflation intact. But
They've got inflation at 1.2%.
Right.
And they're planning on keeping rates low, but they're going to continue to taper.
Right.
So how are they going to achieve that? Because the only reason rates are low is because you're pumping money into the economy. So
like
you're buying
all the bonds.
All the bonds, and you're forcing the price up so that the yields stay low. So if you stop putting that money into the economy, eventually you're not going to be printing anything. So how is it the market going to magically keep that low? I understand the Fed funds rate will stay low, but it doesn't mean that the 10-year note has to.
Right. It'll work on its own.
It has to, yeah.
But people do look at the Fed funds rate kind of as a barometer.
Oh, I understood. But it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, because it goes back to a simple supply and demand, basic economics.
Correct.
Right now, they are creating a huge demand, which is keeping the rates down.
Right.
as soon as they taper that back, where are the buyers?
And okay, so then she's basically saying that her mantra now is to try and get the unemployment rate low. She didn't actually say the unemployment rate. She's looking at the U6, which is the underemployment rate, and that's at about 12.7%. So if you've got a 12.7% U6 number, what's the target? She didn't state what that was. But the idea is to try and drive unemployment down, all right, which is great. But the use of funds is going to, the way that she's going to do it is to use funds to keep interest rates low. Well, printing more money hasn't worked. Keeping interest rate low at this point hasn't really worked. They haven't really created a policy or a plan in place to stimulate unemployment, but they're just going to monitor the numbers and slowly print less money.
Sounds simple.
So it's a working solution, absolutely. I mean, so that's the problem. I mean, yeah, I mean, Colby, as you said earlier in the show, you know, there's only one meeting and we haven't really got a good idea of who she is. But unfortunately, it seems like we sort of have, because if she has, she had this to me, you know, you're the incoming chair. It's your ability to now say to everyone, hey, here I am. This is what I stand for. This is how we're going to fix things. I'm picking up the reins, but now I'm going to put my stamp on the Fed and how we're going to get out of this mess. Because if you go all the way back to Greenspan, he added a bit of money to the economy. He was the first real printer, right? Mm-hmm. And he added some money to the economy, and it worked like gangbusters because we didn't really need much to take flight. Then Bernanke came, old helicopter Ben. He just basically threw money out of the window of a helicopter, and he printed just ridiculous amounts of money, and that didn't work. And now Yellen is the person that not only has to get unemployment down, she's got to try and keep interest rates down. She's got to try and get the economy stimulated without printing money. And she's going to have to mop up, if inflation comes in, like you say, Dan, she has to mop up that excess liquidity to stop ridiculous amounts of inflation.
Right.
So, I mean, she's basically been given the can from the legacies of Greenspan and Bernanke. And she came to the meeting, to me, without a proper plan or an agenda as to how she's going to achieve that, other than we're going to tell you what's going to happen 6 months in advance. Well, she doesn't even know that.
Right. That's
right.
I mean, so what a joke. She had this opportunity, and to me, she just dropped the ball big time.
I actually just followed suit.
Yeah.
That's what.
Well, worse than that, she didn't. She's following suit, but with no definitive way. Because we all know once she stopped printing, so in 6 months at 10 million, right. 10 billion a month, she's done with stimulus. So now what's the plan?
Just let the market roll over.
Yeah, and just keep interest rates low.
Right.
Well, how are you going to do that?
It's not going to work. But we've talked about that before. We've known that she was probably not going to take a different tact. And this whole strategy definitely now looks as if it was put in place without them having any clue how they were going to wind it down.
Yeah. Well, they just
no direction, no knowing. Say, oh, we'll just keep putting money in and the economy will get better, hopefully. And if it does, then we can slowly take it back out and everything will be great. And that's not been happening. The economy is slowly possibly getting better, but you don't know how much is, well, if 100% is tied to the stimulus,
yeah,
or 50% or 25%.
I think the other problem, though, is they're looking at it within the bubble of the United States. How is our economy doing? Mm-hmm. Well, what about the influence of Europe and the emerging markets and Japan and China and all these other places?
Correct.
And they're all struggling, but really, she's looking at it within the microcosm. And once they've started cutting back the stimulus, it's impacted the emerging markets incredibly. Those stock markets have gone down through the floor. Their yields have jumped up because the fast money is being yanked out of there. Their whole idea of their stimulus is now up in smoke. And this is just, we've only taken $30 billion a month off the table, and she's not looking at that. I mean, where's the demand for the goods and services going to come from? So if you want to just create an insular barrier and just look at U.S. as a microcosm on its own, that's what she's sort of doing, and I think that that's also missing out on all the influences outside of the United States.
Right. It is, whether people want to believe it or not, it is an absolute global economy nowadays. There's no investment that is specifically U.S.
Right. Interest rates are driven also by flight quality, right?
Correct.
We have a lot of money coming from overseas, and that's keeping our rates maybe artificially low also. But she doesn't have control over, so
Right.
That's something else we have to look at.
Well, it's an advertisement, really.
Yeah.
So if you think that you're a quality nation, you'll attract the dollars in times that are rough,
correct,
right? Keep your interest rates low. The question is America still a quality nation to invest if you're
true
a foreigner? You know, because if the, for example, the U.S. dollar keeps going down against other currencies, you're going to lose, right? Your interest rates, you're only going to get 1%. But then you look around and what are your options? They're not very good.
That's just it. We saw just a quick snapshot of probably 5-6 months ago where the U.S., you would consider it to be the high yield of the bigger nations.
I know. Well, it still is.
Paying the most. And everyone I know is looking around and going, oh, these rates are miserable.
Yep.
Yet we're the highest paying nation out there that you can feel fairly comfortable with as far as security.
Yeah. So really what's going to drive everything, I believe, is supply and demand, right? And that's stimulating our economy, and how do we do that? And we've put so many shackles on our businesses in the last 5-7 years that it's a little bit trapped, right? We don't have the freedoms we used to have. We don't grow the way we used to, because to do that, to open a business, to have employees, to there are lots more layers of compliance now than there were 5 years ago.
Well, exactly right. And then you look at, okay, which takes me back to the point I made earlier, which was, so her answer is, let's keep interest rates low and soak up some of the excess cash.
Right.
How's that stimulating anything? That's not creating jobs. The jobs, as you said correctly, come from small businesses and being able to provide a level playing field where they can operate. And that has just been taken away.
Correct.
And the middle class, as we've argued on this show, and I've argued on my blog until I'm blue on the face. I'm still blue, really, aren't I? But anyway.
You're getting bluer as we speak.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, what we've said repeatedly is that the playing field's gone. It's not level. It's skewed away. It's taken the middle class and pretty much tossed it away. And every single economy that you see that where that's happened, where the middle class is struggling, that economy has struggled or has resulted in social unrest. I'm not saying we're going to get to social unrest. I'm just saying it's just not a blueprint for success.
Right. Our policies, to me, are not in line with what this country's founded upon.
Right.
And
right.
We have a foreign language speaking guy here or an accent. He was driven here.
Absolutely.
By opportunity.
Right.
Right. Well, and that's where most people are.
Right.
And right now, business-wise, maybe in working for a big corporation, we're drawing lots of smart minds. But if you're an entrepreneur, people left. When we grew up, right, going to classes, we heard in Europe and other places like that, they have so many. We'll finish this.
Yes,
after the break.
Stick around. we'll cover that in much more detail. Be right back. Welcome back. Thanks for listening. You are listening to The Portfolio Doctors. I am Dan Osgood. Steve Bick is in studio with me as always, and we have a special guest today, Mr. Colby Gibson, the branch manager at RPM Mortgage, who Colby is an outstanding, one of the very best I've seen in the mortgage industry lending, and really comes up with solutions that are legitimate, honest-to-goodness solutions and are in your best interest. So we decided, Steve and I were talking, we've wanted to have a show about real estate. We thought, what better way than to bring Colby in? We can talk about some of the strategies he uses with clients, some of the recommendations he makes, and different things he sees, as long as some topics Steve and I want to talk about what you do with real estate, how you position it in your overall investment and financial life, because it is, in most cases, the single biggest investment most people will ever make in their life.
Right. No, exactly right. I mean, it's really the linchpin of most people's investment portfolio is a property. More
right.
People
or
have,
even retirement funding.
Well,
that,
exactly.
That is your biggest piece.
Well, especially if you're using reverse mortgages.
Right.
But, I mean, I think, though, a lot of real estate investments, it's a misperceived investment. I think people buy this house and they expect it to just provide for them forever. And, yes, you do need a roof over your heads. But I don't think many people actually look at real estate as an investment. It's more just a place to live. And I think that's a mistake. I think, you know, it's sent out as the American dream. Mm-hmm. And in times that I've seen, it's anything but that. People end up as this alligator in the room. All of their money is being poured into service the mortgage or keep the house up or paying taxes and insurance on this property. And there are better ways to go. I mean, typically what I've seen is people trying to buy the most expensive house they can possibly afford, rather than maybe something lower down the totem pole that doesn't suck the life out of them. And so I think that this dream is pushed upon them, certainly by the real estate community, and people really need to sit back and take it more a look of it as an investment rather than as just a place to live and where they're going to raise their grandkids.
Right. I've seen many times where people will qualify, like you said, for a huge number. And yes, maybe they can afford it, but like you said, you better really love that house because that's all you're going to get to do is sit in that house and look at the four walls.
Right. Right.
What do you do in those situations, Colby, where someone comes in and says, ooh, I think I qualify for a $5 million house, and you look at the numbers and it says, well, yeah, maybe you can afford it, but you're never going to be able to do anything else.
We call that being house poor, obviously, right?
Yeah, right.
And we have – what's interesting now, I've been in the business 20-plus years. We had a lot more of that 10 years ago and prior because we had a lot more choices for people to go and obtain financing, right, based on what they felt their needs were. Not necessarily what they could afford, but what they felt their needs were.
Who they wanted to keep up.
Yeah, then money got really, really loose, and we lent in that environment with people with no down payment or bad credit or both. And that kind of created the bubble, helped create the bubble. Now there are many more restrictions. So we don't see that kind of reach as often. But some of the questions that we talk to people about are, as a plan, there are two incomes, let's say. Let's say they're a young couple. Or do both plan on working throughout? Because not all do. If you plan on having a family. They bring that kind of stuff up. We talk to them about it. And say if you can go A, buy this price range house, you could probably live here with one and one income. That might be a good strategy for you. It may not. Maybe two are career-oriented, and then we go that route, and then you can go that direction. But I agree with you. People, they do need a place to live, right? Mm-hmm. Rents are rising right now. So it's a good time to buy if it makes economic sense.
It would have been a way better time to buy like 3 years ago.
It would have, but again, you don't know, right?
Right.
You don't know the future. No one knows the future, right. And we had 5 years of stagnation. And yes, we've had appreciation, but things run in cycles in real estate. Are they 2 year cycles or 3 years? Typically not. They're 7 to 10 years. So we're seeing value start to come back a little bit. That's allowing people in the house that they're not really comfortable in, but they had to be in, maybe they have a little equity now and they can sell, and then they can maybe go buy something that they really want to be in for long term. And we have different, for the past like 5 years, there was really one choice as far as loans were concerned. There was a 30-year fixed rate. Doing anything shorter didn't make sense. But a lot of people make decisions, and this is what we help them figure out. They know they're going to be in this house 5 years for a job, career, or what have you. We have 5-year loans, 7-year loans, 10-year loans, rates fixed, and we have gaps now, 0.5% to 1%. Allows them to buy a little more if they want. Everybody's situation is different.
I think that's a big part, a great part of what you do is in many cases it's just everyone is brainwashed. You got to have just 30-year mortgage, bang, done. And that's what everyone's accustomed to, where there are strategies, like you're saying. What's the goal? What is your mortgage strategy here?
Right.
If you're going to live here for the rest of your life and you're young, then sure, a 30-year mortgage probably makes the most sense. But maybe you don't want to have a house payment beyond 15 years, and then maybe the 15 starts to make sense.
Dan, that is true. What really has happened, though, I mean, we're allowed to have those choices now. What I mean by that is the market's allowed us to. For the past 5 years, it really didn't. A 30-year fixed was so close to a 7-year to 5-year as far as interest rate, it'd be silly to even offer that because you didn't have a break. Why not build security? I'm a conservative guy. That's the way I look at things. If a 30-year fixed and a 10-year is an eighth different in rate and you don't know for sure, always go with a 30-year. But that was the last 10 years. Now, because 30-year fixed rates have climbed somewhat, about 1% in the last year or so, and the short-term rates are still low. Now you have opportunity. Now it makes sense to reintroduce those. We had those, in the 90s and early 2000s up to 2007, all those choices. And that's just that's a plan, right?
Right.
I think your question was more, does it make sense, right? Does it make sense to own? Does it make sense to rent? Some people it does. Some people we tell, you've got to get your financial house in order.
Right.
It may make sense to sell your house and rent for a year and get your financials. do these, pay off these debts, accumulate some asset, you know, figure out where you're comfortable, because everybody lives differently. You can have someone with a $2,000 mortgage and $20,000 a year of income. They don't have any money. They spend it like water, right?
But I think there's somewhere else, too, that people don't even consider. I'm not saying that housing is a bad investment. Oftentimes, it's a great investment.
Yes.
But instead of maybe shooting for that high-end house, which you can't really afford, but you want to live in that neighborhood, sometimes it might be better to rent there, which maybe you can afford, and then use your excess cash to buy a property somewhere else that you wouldn't necessarily want to live per se, but you can then start building equity, having renters pay off your property, and then start building your portfolio of real estate and eventually end up in the house you want to end up in.
Now, that's not a bad strategy at all either. I mean, there are so many different – a lot of people, buy owner-occupied, at least right now with our lower laws, you get a break in interest rate. You get a capital gains break up to $250,000 individual, $500,000 for a married couple, tax-free. And when you have capital gain rates 15, 20% plus state capital gain rates, you're talking about a large sum of money. I think it's a very wise, if you plan on living in a particular area to, I mean, again, it depends on the area. Southern California, this big blue thing out there we're talking about, you live near it. You're, especially in San Diego, I believe you almost can't go wrong if you're looking long term.
Right.
Because if you go up the coast, you go up to LA and Orange County, values are 30, 40% higher, further even inland. Right. And so you have this mass of humanity that comes down here from time to time and go, wow, this is a bargain. So it keeps it's a kind of a stopgap for us. And I've also felt, you know, lots of different approaches, but having an investment property is a brilliant approach too. And you can convert that to a primary residence sometime if you want to.
Right. I've seen and helped people devise that strategy for their retirement. Of, this is where I want to live. I've got kids with me here. This is a better area for raising a family. As soon as the kids are out off to college, time to retire, they either rent that property they were living in or sell it,
right,
move to the rental property they've had for 10 years and had a renter paying off, and retire comfortably in a smaller house and pocket the excess cash.
Right. Especially here in Southern California, you can do that. You can.
Yeah.
I have lots of, not lots, I have quite a few customers that they'll buy. They kind of have identified where they want to be. Maybe it's not in California. And they go buy rental property there. And they're at least tied into that market, so they aren't going to lose out. And they know what it's going to be. And someone else is helping pay the mortgage, which is brilliant. Another piece of their pie to manage. And if they have growth here, they can time it and retire and take some of that equity and retire.
Right.
And you can do it locally, too. Lately, it's been very difficult because there's been so many flippers and that kind of stuff. And it's real tough to get a real good value or buy
investors.
Yeah, investors.
The market,
and it's all cash, and it's tough to compete with that. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate that. I think also what I've seen in terms of rental rates is that when you get to the really high-end houses, so you get to like the $4, $5 million real estate, you know, price points, there's a cap on what they can charge in rent.
Oh, yeah.
So you actually get a heck of a good deal if you can afford it.
Oh, yeah.
At like a $4 million house, suddenly the rent's maybe $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month. Once you cross over $5,000, there's a limited amount of people who can afford that. So you're getting this house for, call it $6,000 a month. I've got friends who have rented a place at $6,000 a month, a $4-5 million house,
right,
where your monthly nut in terms of being able to afford that is something like $10,000 or $15,000 a month. And so you can live in this great neighborhood, but you could then buy a $500,000 house down the street that's being paid for, maybe pocket a bit of income. So
that's a brilliant strategy. I always look at it as a hook, okay? If you have the means to buy and you don't, in my opinion, have one, even if you choose that strategy where you're renting, you definitely should have an investment property in case you want to stay there, because now you're tied to the market. You know, if all of a sudden we have these crazy inflation things go on, and there's a lot of fear of that happening. I've lived in Southern California my whole life. So my parents bought a house in 1968 for $28,000. 10 years later, that house was worth about $100,000. Well, my father was a teacher. In 1968, he made $7,500 a month, or a year, I'm sorry, a year, right? 10 years later, though, he was making like 30 or 40. So that $20,000. He was making more than he bought this house that he barely stretched into, right? His income. There's that can happen too. So having a piece of property keeps you in the market, if you will, and controls that inflation push possibly.
Real estate.
Whether it's a rental or whether it's a primary residence, one of the two I think you have to have. Or you should have, no matter what you do.
Yeah, real estate is one of the better hedges against inflation.
It's a great hedge.
It's going to go right up with inflation. Well, stick around. When we come back, we'll continue discussing mortgage strategies and real estate strategies for investing and your future. Welcome back. Thanks for listening. This is the Portfolio Doctors. I'm Dan Osgood.
I'm Steve Bick.
And I'm Colby Gibson.
Colby Gibson in with us today. Colby's a manager at RPM Mortgage. If you want to reach out to him and discuss mortgage strategies, best way, call him directly, 760-557-2230. Once again, that's 760-557-2230. Or you can probably, is there an easy way to look you up on the web? Just RPM Mortgage?
Encinitas Branch.
Encinitas RPM Mortgage. And reach out. Like I said, he's one of the best I've ever talked to regarding mortgages and mortgage strategies.
And it's Colby with a K.
K, that's right. that's good to know. And if anything we're talking about, you want to further clarification or there's something you would like us to talk about, you can reach out to either Steve or I. You can reach me, Dan, at theportfoliodoctors.com, or you can reach Steve at theportfoliodoctors.com, or go directly to our website, theportfoliodoctors.com. We have a list of all of our past shows. If you're a first-time listener, you like what you're hearing, please go to the iTunes store, download our podcast, and take a listen. We feel we've got a lot of good, useful information out there, and we'd like as many people to hear it as possible.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking real estate, and the one thing that people always look at, obviously, is the payment stream. How much is it going to cost me? And one of the big factors that actually adjusts that pretty significantly, of course, is interest rates. And we've got interest rates still stuck at way down at the bottom of the barrel. I don't know, what is the interest rate right now, Colby?
In the mid-4s.
4% on a 30-year?
Mid-4%, yeah.
Okay, so about 4%. It's loosely tied to movements in the 10-year and the 30-year Treasury notes. I know the 30-year has been moved a little bit. But it appears to me that the market's relatively fickle. I mean, if those rates went from 4 to 5, I think there'd be quite a massive impact in terms of the people acquiring properties. Would you say yes, or is that not really?
No, you're absolutely right. Actually, we had that kind of growth, if you will, in interest rates 4 months ago. We were at high threes, low fours. Mm-hmm. Now we've bounced around between the mid fours to the upper fives, and we've seen quite a bit of slowdown in our industry, both with refinances, but also with people buying homes because there's less they can afford. There's also scarcity right now. There's not a whole lot of listings right now, so
the houses are demanding a higher price,
right.
And that small bump in rates has been just enough to tip it out of reach.
And a lot of people are afraid of the mortgage process because there's been so much, not only, newscast, print, everywhere you look, it's, it's horrible, the sky's falling, it's, the worst thing you could do, it's like going to the dentist. It's not as bad as you might think. Walking into one of those big boxes with the letters on front, sometimes it is because you're handing it to someone and they're going to take that information and figure it out and see if you fit in their box. And they may tell you 30 days later. The mortgage banker and mortgage broker world is a little different where we take that information up front, we sift through it, and we try and find a solution if there is one, or coach you and say, put this piece of your life in order or do this or do that, come back in 3 months, and maybe we can get you X, Y, and Z. So we act more like a little bit of counseling, if you will.
Right.
And we have more solutions.
You've told me in times where people will come to you saying, hey, what can you do for me? And they have a banking relationship somewhere, and you've just pointed them right back and said, look, I'm not going to be able to do anything different. You've already got this banking relationship. Just have them do it for you.
Correct. Sometimes that's the best solution. I wouldn't say all the time.
Right.
I'd say probably, you know, a bank's this is my opinion, but a bank's pull through is probably, you know, 40, 50, 60%. Someone applies for a loan, they get a loan. With us, it's more like when they actually apply for a loan, it's probably in the 90 percentile.
Okay.
Because we weed out or try and figure out who can qualify up front. So you aren't wasting your time.
Right.
Number one. Number two, we have about 20 different channels, at least our company does, to place your loan. Because every bank or institution that we work with, and we're direct lenders also, we do directly with Fannie Mae, so we have what are called no overlays. But every bank has a different kind of snapshot of what they think a loan should be. Mm-hmm. And you may not fit that snapshot, right? And you don't know that. It may be random. You walk into the right bank. But what's the probability that you are? I've had at least 10 to 12 customers this past year that have gone to a bank and couldn't get a loan and come to me, and I say, I have no idea why you can't. I can see why they wouldn't because of X, Y, and Z, but we get them a loan.
Okay.
And they're at a better rate typically.
Well, if you get a loan, is it always still based on income, or are there still asset-based loans out there?
Well, that's a tricky question. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, it's all income-based, 100%. The government set it.
So you could have a $2 million net worth and can't get a loan.
Oh, we've had a lot of those.
Yeah, you see, now that just doesn't make any
sense
absurd to me.
Now, that's because everybody went away from the what's called a stated income loan.
Right.
No, it ruined the market. It didn't. What ruined the market was stated income with horrible credit.
Right.
And
zero,
no income.
Zero down payment.
Yeah.
Oh, no assets.
No, nothing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you,
exactly.
Can I share real brief?
This
was indicative of our industry or just our – now, these loans were put in place by the federal government, right? They said if you don't do a certain portion of these BP paper loans to companies, we're going to shut off everything else to you. So they had to lend these kinds of loans, but they were insane. I mean, I had a and I had a real estate agent that this was in the early 2000s come to me, called me about a customer. I want you to talk to him. And told me the story. The story was husband and wife. Wife had just gotten out of prison. I mean, this is real life story. Just got out of prison. Husband was still in prison. They had credit scores below 600, they had no jobs and no assets, but there were loans that would lend to them. There were. I didn't want to do it. I wouldn't do that. We didn't touch that kind of business. I dealt with the A type people that should just owning a home is not a right. It's a privilege,
right?
But our industry created it because. And now you look on the other side and you say, well, maybe someone owning a house and values were going up so quickly they can make $30,000 and then solve all their problems and be better off, right? Well, it's a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah,
right? It doesn't last.
Pure gambling.
Pyramid. So, but this agent fired me and bad talked me in his office about this because they said I was lazy. I didn't want to go to work and do the real hard loans. Well, to me, that wasn't a hard loan. That was a loan that should never be done in the first place. But we did have avenues for it. So that was a stated income. Horrible credit, no equity, no asset, no job loan, right? Those were available. Those are no longer available. They wiped all that out. But all you hear in the media is state incomes are horrible. That's caused everything. It didn't. There's a thing called equity in real estate. And there's a thing called credit. And if you have equity, that means you own, you're putting skin in the game. So we're starting, our company right now is about to launch at one of the first, we call it not stated income, we'll take a peak income. If you have 50% equity on a purchase, excellent credit, good reserves, we won't ask for your tax returns. And it'll open up, and that seems like silly. Well, yeah, that's a much better risk than putting 3.5% down and some guy on a salary trying to buy something, right? There's less risk. But those loans are coming back. It's the secondary market that got wiped out, and it's coming back. It's Wall Street money, basically. And we have different variables of that. So common sense is coming back in the marketplace, and that'll help because there are a lot of people. And I was unbuilt. You, perfect story. Got $2 million. He's making $1 million a year, every year, on his tax returns. He wanted $300,000. Went to five banks. Came to me. Couldn't get it done. And the reason, some bureaucrat just said, the way you prove income is you have to have income from the same source for two consistent years. Well, this guy owned three different companies. One company made money one year, one company made money another year, the other company made money the third year, he made $1 million a year, every year, tax returns. No one would lend him money. That's why we need, and some of our files are literally, I'm not telling you, I'm not kidding, 6 to 7 inches
wow.
thick of paper. It's insane.
Well, that's what you have to do to sign a mortgage document anymore.
Yeah, well, that's just their paperwork, right, from them. Because they own a couple of partnerships. They have this, they have that, and we're beating them up. And these are our best customers, right? These are people with perfect credit, great assets, great equity. Doesn't matter. I need it all. Mm-hmm. So hopefully some common sense comes back in our industry. On the investment side or Wall Street money side, it is. There are some solutions. The rates won't be 30-year fixed. They'll be, you know, 5-year fixed, that kind of thing. It'll be in the 3 or 4% range, give or take, based on credit score. But it is coming back, thank goodness. And I think it'll help our economy. And I think it'll help stimulate it somewhat and get people moving again. So it's coming back.
One thing you said was that the Fed encouraged those types of loans. Is that the case? Was that the case back in the
day? Oh, yeah. It's
unbelievable.
It's HUD. It was HUD.
Understood.
Those loans were designed by HUD.
Wow.
And encouraged. And now you could see why, right? I mean, there's a party to see, you know, everybody's.
Well, not really.
Well,
but maybe you can explain it.
Let me explain. I mean, I don't believe that.
I'm not sure we have enough time left.
Yeah, I don't.
I try and see both sides of every, you know, argument, right? And to me, it wasn't right, but I could see if you're a little bit of a bleeding heart, someone's struggling, they can go buy a piece of property, they can make easy money in this, you know, in the early 2000s.
Well, easy money.
Yeah, it doesn't make it. They can make $30,000 in 2 years, sell the house, solve other issues, and then go, you know, build their life, right? Mm-hmm. But at a great peril to our country, basically, is what happened. And we had companies, that's all they did, right?
That strategy is a great strategy all the way
until
it doesn't work anymore. And that's
and we all
we
knew
saw
it would,
what happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then you blamed the mortgage industry.
Right. And that's
right.
not where it came from.
And it really came from the banks.
You can say Washington. Right. You can take it a higher
okay,
level.
Okay, I don't want to. I'm not going there. Yeah.
we try not to make this a political show. But
right. What's a rubber band, right? In an industry, something happens. It gets stretched. It got stretched. It snapped. Now it snapped back, and it's really tight. And it's starting to stretch a little bit. And common sense will come into play. The market forces will. No one's going to risk their own funds in this secondary market, you know, that's out there, unless it makes good fundamental common sense. We won't see the 100% financing, stated income,
good.
No credit loans ever again. Thank goodness.
Good. Well, we hope not. And that is Colby Gibson with a K at RPM Mortgage up in Encinitas. You can reach him directly, 760-557-2230. Stick around. We'll be right back and cover a few more strategies for real estate. Welcome back. This is the Portfolio Doctors on a blustery Friday
afternoon. It actually
afternoon.
Was sunny when we finally sunny. Came in here. You've been indoors so
I've
long.
I've been locked in the studio all day. I'm
yeah.
at a double shift, so I don't know completely know what it's like outside, but leading you into the weekend. We've been having discussions about real estate, how it fits into whether it's an investment strategy, just your whole financial picture, utilizing mortgages, rental properties, etc. We have Colby Gibson, a special guest in here from RPM Mortgage up in Encinitas, and he's been giving great insight into strategies people use and things he sees in the market. Now we're going to change a little bit and talk about more specifically investment properties and how you actually get into one and how that makes probably the most sense. Because it's probably not the best thing to just go out and do 100% financing on some rental property, if you can even get that, which I don't believe that's possible.
Not available.
Unless you're paying cash. You can't just do that. So it may not always make sense. And then you also have to add that in. What's your strategy? Do you want it to cash flow? Do you want it to break even? Are you okay taking a small hit every month? Can you afford that? Just to have the ability to own some real estate in the future and maybe have that as retirement income. Any thoughts, Steve?
Well, I think first off, there's no way you can get an investment property for less than about 20 or 30% down. So you're going to have to put some money down, I think.
20 to 25% down.
Yeah, yep. And everything I've worked through. And then if you're buying it through a company, that's even tougher because a lot of times they won't finance. They have to have your personal signature on there, right?
Yeah, you'll need your personal signature in any residential real estate.
And then next question is, can you find something that'll actually cash flow? Because the last thing you want out of an investment property is something that doesn't cash flow, and now you have to feed that every single month.
Correct.
So, I mean, is that even available in San Diego?
There are places.
There are?
There are. South San Diego.
Okay.
There are places.
Probably like East Lake, I would imagine. They took
East Lake,
a pretty big
Chula Vista, there's some spots. It depends on how much effort and work you want to put into it. There's places. There's fixtures in San Diego. It's a little more difficult right now because the true fixer, there's so many flippers, if you will, out there.
Right, exactly.
And so you're competing against that marketplace.
Yep.
So and you can go out to Temecula. There's opportunities, Escondido. I mean, San Diego's a big place. And you just have to put the numbers together, right? Put pencil to paper and do the calculations. A lot of times it may be a duplex sometimes works. Sometimes some creative things happen in a property. We've seen that really add value. I mean, to rent a garage will cost you, $500 to $100,000 a month. So some of these places have, say, a converted garage. Well, we can't use that as income to qualify as long as you qualify, but you can use it as income to rent out the place, right? That helps. Those kinds of things we've seen. They may have a lot of older homes with some, unpermitted granny flats or unpermitted space, and they're renting those places out, and there's a history of it. And if you can find that. So, you have to do a little work and a little research, but there's still opportunity out there.
Yeah, so the easy money is really gone but there are some opportunities here and there if you look hard enough.
Well, you say easy money. I mean, you've got to look at, everything's a risk, right? So is real estate appreciating and how much do you believe it's going to appreciate in the next 2, 3, 5 years? Some people would say, well, I'd rather invest and even take a little negative if I think I've got a great buy on this thing, it's going to appreciate because that appreciation itself is going to eat that negative and make it nothing, and I can make money that way. I'm more conservative. I look at cash flow. I think you want to break even. I don't think you want to feed a monster.
No.
And, it's not a good use of your capital. So it's another piece of the puzzle or your pie as a strategy. And some people like it. Some people, if you're going to hire a management company to do it, you got to factor that in.
Yeah, that's 10% right there.
At least. Can you self-manage it? Do you live close enough? I mean, there's lots of factors.
Right.
But I still believe that we didn't even touch on it, and I shouldn't bring it up, but you can invest in real estate notes and still be part of it. You don't have part of appreciation, but you're part of the market itself. And that's real estate related too.
Right.
There's opportunities to do that. So
I think though for definitely our listeners, if you don't have, say, $150,000 to put down, I think that if you are prepared to take, and it's everything I guess is a risk to some degree, but if you look a little bit further afield outside of San Diego, I mean, I've been finding some massive bargains of all places in Columbus, Ohio. Not that I'm suggesting that everyone should rush over there, but I'm just saying that, in there, I mean, I'm picking up houses for 15, 20 grand a piece.
Right.
And the rent is $600 a month.
Right.
So you're making, $6,000-$7,000 return on $15,000.
Absolutely.
Huge returns.
You're absolutely right.
But so, I mean, you don't have to look local. Everyone seems to think that you have to look local because you know the area and you know what to look for. I sort of disagree with that to some degree. You need to have the right people on the ground to be able to do the research for you.
That's what I was about to make sure you have.
Yeah.
Because you can go to Detroit and buy something for nothing.
Exactly.
And there is nothing. And no one, no supply.
Correct. And that's the other thing I was going to say, which was the next point, was, I mean, yeah, you could look around here and you might find cheap property. Say, for example, Riverside was a great spot. I mean, it's like a ghost town almost now from what I hear. Or maybe people are moving back in there. But I mean, at one point they had so overbuilt it that there were thousands of houses just sitting almost vacant. And if you had bought one of those as rental income,
Las Vegas, same thing.
Yeah, same thing. So you really have to be careful, and you have to have a situation where your rental income is based on something.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So in my example, Ohio, no one really, to me, well, I'm sure some people do like to go there. I've never even actually been. But where in Columbus, as an example, there's a school. right? So your rents are based on that success of the school. I also used to own properties in Killeen, Texas. I mean, you probably couldn't even find it on a map anymore, but it's in the middle of nowhere. But it's right outside Fort Hood, which is the second largest military base in the United States. And that was growing and being fed by other military bases.
Right.
So you've got something that's going to support rent.
You need an engine.
You need an engine. If you're just buying out there for an investment property just to get on board, and you need to find out what's going to drive that engine to be able to provide you with those renters.
Absolutely. And I agree 100%. That strategy is a little different in that you're probably not counting on the equity growth.
Well, you can't.
You're counting on the income, right? It's like a dividend, right?
Correct. That's all you're looking at.
It's a dividend play. So another thing you can do, you have those two items, a place maybe you want to retire.
Well, that's exactly right.
Another choice, right? The resort place. You know, you can find places where you're investing in something into cash flows, and maybe that's really worth it because maybe you want to wind up there, and you're buying in the market now, and maybe you couldn't buy it in the market in 20 years.
Well, resort investing is an interesting one because the issue with resort investing is when you have a tenant, like I've got a friend who has a property downtown in La Jolla, he rents out to tourists, and he rents it for $1,400 a week, which is, I mean, huge money, right? Yes. Call it $6,000 a month.
For La Jolla, I'm not sure that sounds that much.
Well, maybe it isn't, but he's only got a two-bedroom apartment. So, I mean, you know, it's a lot, all right? But the problem is that you can be rented for like 3-4 weeks straight, cash flow like crazy, and then you can be vacant for a month or two.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, it balances out, and you have to be prepared to accept those swings. If you're really lucky, you might just get filled out forever. But, I mean, you know, unless you ride on the beach.
But I'm saying even – I have a property in one of those places, and we did it as a vacation rental. It was a winter place. And we decided, I have a couple partners, to not rent it out because it costs us too much to rent it.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's wear and tear.
Well, exactly.
So you want to look at that as maybe a long-term rental.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think at this point, look at income, right?
Absolutely.
Don't base everything on appreciation. I mean, I wouldn't, particularly after the market's run as far as it has. There's a right. I'm not saying we're having a correction coming, but – you know, thinking you're going to get 10% return on it every year is not in.
Don't rush into something just to say, hey, I'm investing in real estate.
Exactly.
Be
100%.
Choosy right now.
And deal
and
with
all
an
times.
Expert.
That's right. Well, thank you very much. You've been listening to The Portfolio Doctors. Colby Gibson in with RPM Mortgage up in Encinitas. Thank you very much for your insight.
Thank you for having me.
Taylor, great job. Thanks for helping us run the show. Steve, great job as always. Everyone, have a great Friday.
Doctors on ESPN 1700. To schedule a financial health check, go to theportfoliodoctors.com or to speak with Dan Osgood, Steve Bick, or any guests on this program, call 858-764-7250. That's 858-764-7250 or go online at theportfoliodoctors.com. That's theportfoliodoctors.com. The Portfolio Doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, who are investment advisor representatives of their respective registered investment advisor firms, ACAS LLC and Cunningham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed by the Portfolio Doctors and guests on this radio show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the recipient of or a substitute for personalized advice from ACAS LLC, Cunningham Management LLC, or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. ACAS LLC and Cunningham Management LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any listener. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.